the skies are sunny. Old man depression, you are through, you done us wrong.
Old man depression, goodbye. Hello, San Diego, Orange County. Welcome back to In the Money with Gary Gordon here on Business Talk Radio. I am your host, Gary Gordon, certified financial planner, money manager, the smart and balanced investment advisor. I do not preach to you about getting rich quick, and I will not promise ways for you to double or triple your money overnight. That's not me, no siree. 888-500-GARY is the number to reach me throughout the week. I'd even be happy to meet you for lunch. 888-500-4279, 888-500-GARY. We also have my daily web commentary. If you want a piece of me each and every day, you are going to want to read the ETF Expert. Go to ETFExpert.com. It is free to get my ideas on the best way to invest in stocks and bonds through the world of ETFs, making exchange-traded funds easier. Also, for those of you listening to this segment via the ETFExpert.com podcast, we do welcome you. Remember, ETFs are funds that trade like stocks and bonds. They have the liquidity and the ease of trading that you get from individual stocks and bonds, but you also have the diversification of mutual funds. Hey, but they beat the mutual funds upside down and backwards through significantly lower costs. In fact, ETFs average between 0.25% and 0.40%, saving you nearly 1%. That could be $1,000 in every $100,000 invested over traditional mutual funds. Now, I could speak all day about how wonderful ETFs are, and I will. But I'm going to start by discussing a hit piece on ETFs that appeared in the Wall Street Journal, of all places, my favorite publication. My favorite publication had a commentator who on the 19th talked about some of the negatives of ETFs. But I thought it was an inappropriate analysis, and let me tell you why. When a commentator in the media points to the exceptions, but not the rule, then they are making a big mistake. I mean, it is one thing to point out that a few ETFs may or may not have failed us. It's quite another to shine a microscope on one of 600 ETFs without considering the entire laboratory. We use ETFs to provide diversification at a lower cost than mutual funds. And the overwhelming majority of ETFs provide diversification at significantly lower expense than traditional mutual funds. We also choose ETFs that track established indexes because the ETFs outperform actively managed mutual funds. The overwhelming majority of ETFs reasonably approximate the desired index, and more often than not, they outperform the mutual fund counterpart. We also invest in ETFs because they're transparent. We know what's in the index. They're flexible because we can buy and sell them at a desired price point, and they're tax efficient. Yet the journal's commentator described the fact that 3% of ETFs have some form of capital gains distribution in 2005, and 6% of the ETF population served distributions in 2006. So they made it sound like there's this doubling of capital gains distribution without talking about the size of those distributions or the other 94% of ETFs that did not have capital gains. I'm talking about capital gains distributions now. Ignored in this piece, 94% of ETFs did not have capital gains distributions at all, whereas 94% of mutual funds did. Moreover, the size of those capital gains distributions were ignored. A few ETFs, 6%, had small capital gains distributions, while mutual funds turned out one of the largest distributions years on record, where many investors were paying taxes on a significant portion of their mutual fund portfolios, few ETF investors were paying much of anything, if at all. That's why you need to credit the lack of turnover in the structure of most indexes that the ETF industry tracks. Now, one of the most egregious statements in the journal's commentary was the following. Here's the quote. back-tested data for the WisdomTree High Yielding Equity Index shows average annual returns outperforming the Russell 1000 Value Index for several time periods, including 3 percentage points for the 10-year period ending in March. However, from June 2006 through the end of March 2007, the ETF based on the WisdomTree Index trailed the Russell 1000 Value Index by more than a half a percentage point. Stay with me on this, folks, because the commentator talks out of two sides of his mouth. Typically, you'll have everyone talking about focusing on the long term. And yet here we have someone saying, is the 10-month return is not performing up to snuff? The 10-month return? Is that the same as the 10-year return that the back-tested data for the WisdomTree High Yielding Equity Index points to? I mean, give me a break. Will every ETF perfectly track an index? No. Do most ETFs offer index performance at a fraction of the cost of mutual funds? Yes. Will every ETF be equally tax efficient? No. But do most ETFs offer zero or minuscule capital gains distribution concerns? Yes. So the next time you see someone pointing out the negatives, try to take into consideration the big picture and see if there are a lot of negatives in that bigger picture rather than shine the microscope on the few errant examples like the 6% that served up capital gains distributions opposed to the 94% that didn't. Okay, I'm off my rant. Let's just talk about single country exchange traded funds and the problems that some of them have because they have extreme exposure to individual stocks. And that's not the point with ETFs. It's to give you that diversification. I mean, one of the chief reasons that we invest in exchange-traded funds, the ability to diversify away from the risk of a single company. So when some international ETFs expose themselves to as much as 17%, 20%, 25% in a single stock, you're not getting the type of diversification you thought you were when you invested in that country in the first place. Example, you want to invest in Mexico. One of the indexes is the MSCI Mexico Index Fund, EWW, but 25% of it is in one stock, American Movil. Belgium Index, EWK, 25% in one stock, Fortis. South Korea Index Fund, EWY, 17.8% in Samsung. Now, any investor would truly be mesmerized by the gains that these funds I just mentioned have produced over the last 4 years. Absolutely amazing gains. But it's based in large part on an individual stock doing really well. So a scandal at Samsung, that would seriously hurt the Korea Index Fund. A hole in the hull at Fortis would sink the fortunes of the Belgian index, EWK. In contrast, regional ETFs like Latin America, like Asia, like Europe, they've logged more impressive rewards relative to the risks of the single countries. Sometimes they've outperformed the single countries, sometimes they haven't, but you don't have as much exposure to an individual stock. Example, the S&P Latin America Index, ILF, only 10% in American Movil. The S&P Europe 350 Index Fund, only 1% in Fortis. Emerging Markets Index Fund, ticker symbol EEM, only 4% in Samsung. Now, I'm not suggesting that you pile into emerging markets or into Europe or into Latin America or into Asia. Certainly want to pile it, not, you do not want to pile into that with reckless abandon. I'm just saying that for me, I prefer ETFs with less than 10% in a single company stock. So I would rather be in Latin America Index, ILF. I would rather be in Pacific X Japan Index, EPP, than I would be necessarily in a South Korea Index Fund with 17.8% in Samsung or a Mexico Index Fund with 24.5% in American Movil. That would be more risk than I'd be willing to take. When we come back, we're going to talk about one of the most important investment vehicles that you have, the rollover IRA. You do not want to take that 401k and send it to the next company you move to, nor do you want to take that 401k and put it into an annuity. God help you if you make that mistake. Stick with us and learn why the rollover IRA is your most important tax-deferred growth vehicle.